so bad.
So bad.
If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. And we're going to be talking about the sideshow, you know. And I have with me Mr. Albert Lanier, who's a freelance writer and been around here a while, and he's been on the show before. But we're going to try to explore and come up with some answers as to who took the country. You know, there's this claim that the Republicans are aggressively attempting to, their whole campaign, their planks is to, you know, get the country back, heal the Constitution, take back America, and make America great again. Now, I'm sort of selling it short because there's much more they want, but we'll, in the next 2 hours, we'll do that and try to help them find out who in the heck took the country. Who did that, and how could they have done that under these watchful eyes of the Republican Party and the right-wingers and the teabaggers and the left-wingers and the, you know, something must be going on here, folks. Is it the Russians, the Martians, the Christians, the Muslims, the gay people, the black people? Who took this country from these privileged people? We're going to try to find out. So if you have any clues out there and want to help us, because we must, you know, protect America from our standpoint, that is, because America affords us all a great liberty, justice, even though it's sometimes you have to struggle to get justice, but it's affordable. And so anyway, without much more chatter, please feel free to call in 524-1080. Hold your comments to a reasonable time, and it's going to be just a hoedown here today. If you'd like to on the Carol Cox Show, you can pick it up at podcast. And the only rules is just try and not be profane. Mm-hmm. And other than that, sky's the limit, because right. This is an exploration, right? We're attempting to find it, because
exploration. I like that.
We lost our country, man. So Al, welcome aboard. And
well, thank you. It's nice to be back on the Carol Cox Show, and it's been a little busy media wise for me. I just did a interview on a show called The Robert Christian Show, based in Seattle. So I did a call in interview with that show, and now I'm here back on the Carol Cox Show. So doing some media recently here about politics and talking mm-hmm. about this election. There's so much to talk about, just so much. And it's interesting from my perspective, having been a freelance journalist for 21 years. I've been a journalist for 21 years. I've actually covered a presidential caucus. I covered the Democratic Party caucus in 2008 for a publication, which sadly now is defunct, mm-hmm. In the Bay Area called Asian Week. I covered the Obama-Clinton caucus, which was a contested caucus. Mm-hmm. Much like a lot of these caucuses now, both on the Republican and Democratic side, are highly contested this year. Mm-hmm. And that was contested. You had surrogates coming to Hawaii in 2008. I think Hillary Clinton's daughter, Chelsea, was here. And Obama had some surrogates here. And Obama, well, I'm just going to say it. Obama destroyed Hillary Clinton that year in mm-hmm. the Democratic Party caucus. So I've actually covered a caucus here. I've also covered local elections here. Mm-hmm. So I look at it, look at things less from the professional pundit class mm-hmm. that you see on television, the punditocracy, and more from kind of the street level reporter's point of view.
Right.
And in terms of mostly from a local election point of view, but also having covered elections, I look at it from that point of view, that kind of prism, that kind of mindset.
So if we can set a tone here as to the, we want to be as forthright as the information available to me, mm-hmm. of course. But there is even people suspect of the Obama's presence, and I don't mean because mm-hmm. of race. Obama is a politician.
Correct.
And he is from Chicago.
Oh, that's true.
Okay, yeah. So this is a place where...
Well, he's originally from Hawaii.
Yeah, but... He left his heart in Chicago.
He left his heart in Chicago.
On the Green River.
When you talk about Obama, what made Obama was Chicago, and that's why his mm-hmm. heart is in Chicago, mm-hmm. because it was the Democratic machine. Mm-hmm. I know people won't like me saying this, but it was the Democratic Party machine that made Obama. Mm-hmm. It made him in Chicago when he became a state legislator. Mm-hmm. You know, he had an important mentor in one of the major Democratic Party, I think his name is Emile Jones or something. Mm-hmm. He was a mentor to Obama legislatively mm-hmm. in kind of siphoning off legislation that Obama could get behind and pass on the floor to establish his bona fides or bona fides, his credentials. You also see how important Chicago is to Obama in terms of dealing with a constituency.
Right.
Whether it's the African-American constituency or the liberal Caucasian constituency in the district that I believe he won, I think eventually, not only in the legislature, but also in the for U.S. Senate. Well, yeah. U.S. Senate was statewide.
And there are many that express concerns, and mm-hmm. I've not talked about this on the show, but mm-hmm. there's a... You know, Bobby Rush.
Oh, yeah, he ran against Bobby Rush.
Remember, the former Black Panther Party member
yeah.
and reformist. So Obama ran against him. Mm-hmm. And remember, there was a thing, a quote about progress. He wanted to do progress.
Right.
So Obama isn't just showed up yesterday and became this person who is...
Well, hold on. Go ahead, sorry.
And so did Obama get... favors, and some say that he did in fact get favors for taking out Bobby Rush, the Democratic Party, and trying to come. This is just right. the information that's tossed out right. there. So I mention that because on each side of the aisle you have nonsense and BS. That they call it politics,
yes.
but the reality is we in order to fix a problem and find out who took the country away,
right.
we have to be honest about every player and what their play is and what mm-hmm. when their coach sends them in, what was their play and what
football analogy, right?
Right, you understand?
Yeah.
So or basketball, whatever you have your assignment.
Well, it is March Madness.
So did he in turn get a favor because you know doing the banks and favoring the banks and is it the capitalistic society that uh-huh. that is using him as well? So just right. to mention that, so I'm offering that. I don't want anybody to call that.
Uh-oh.
You're just
you're gonna upset the Obama fans
well,
in Hawaii, and there are a number of them.
Too bad. I love him there.
I love it.
I love him for being there, but it's not all about Obama. This is about a struggle,
right.
American history,
right.
and Obama is just one
right.
actor
mm-hmm.
in the whole screenplay.
Right.
Period.
Right.
It's not about Obama. It's
right.
about us
right.
as American citizens and people that have struggled and
right.
gays, the disabled, and various mm-hmm. religious groups.
Right.
So we have to be honest about everything, and I have concerns, and you just
right.
don't pop up on the scene. But
right.
I'm familiar with Chicago politics to some degree because
mm-hmm.
I went to school back there in that area, worked back there, and I keep an eye
right.
on it.
Well, in regards to Chicago, you bring up Bobby Rush. Now, Obama ran against Bobby Rush,
uh-huh.
who was a U.S. House member. He was in the U.S. House of Representatives,
right.
Representing a district in Chicago, I believe. And Obama had gone to, the state Senate, and he had run against Bobby Rush. He got defeated.
Uh-huh.
Bobby Rush said, "Who does this white boy think he is?" Of course,
quote,
Obama is
quoting,
biracial.
Quoting Bobby Rush.
"Who does this white boy think he is?" Of course, Obama is biracial, so maybe that was a knock against him in that way. Now, Bobby Rush was backed by Bill Clinton in
right.
the race.
Exactly.
Bill Clinton actually campaigned for him there because he was campaigning for Democratic House members and members of Congress.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So he tried to oust Bobby Rush. He didn't. The interesting thing about Obama is that he, and this is tricky to say, but it's the thing about Obama that's interesting is that like any politician who's successful, you have to be selected before you're elected. That's the way politics works, not only in the U.S., but in other countries around the world. You have to be selected to be elected. People should
mm-hmm.
never forget that. In the case of Obama, he was selected before he was elected.
So are you saying if you want to be successful in the man's world, you have to be selected by the man?
Yes.
Know, the capitalist. And that's what we're dealing with. We're not dealing with mm-hmm. capitalists is both Republican, liberal, green,
right.
and all those people that have learned to make
right.
money and want to protect money
right.
and have
right.
believe in a capitalistic
right.
approach. This is what we shall do.
Right.
And so Obama has been an implement
yeah.
to some degree, and that's not to say bad things about him, but that's to say things about
He's
him.
He's been an implement and an instrument.
Yeah.
So the importance of Obama is especially because of the 8 disastrous years of the George W. Bush administration,
uh-huh.
which was a disaster not only for America in general, but also for the Republican Party.
Uh-huh.
That's why George W. Bush is virtually a recluse compared uh-huh. to other presidents.
Now,
you don't see him as much.
Who was before George W. Bush?
Well, before George W. Bush, you had Bill Clinton.
Right. So, you know, and we got NAFTA and all of those things. So
right.
I lay that out. You're not, mm-hmm. not exchanging barbs. It's just to say that when we do start talking about these guys with big hands and you know, and going to seal the borders up, we want to be fair and just avoid. I want to have a conversation where
right.
we analyze and receive information that gives us a better insight
right.
to how does one stand up and say, we'll beat the bleep out of them if they come to our campaigns and
mm-hmm.
quoting or referring to
right.
Donald Trump.
Right.
And
well, the Donald Trump, here's the thing about this election year, and this is one of the things I wanted to get into here. First and foremost, the way that this election race has been covered by what I call the dominant media,
uh-huh.
Other people call it the mainstream media or the media, the running elites, I call it the dominant media, by cable news networks, by newspapers, by what radio stations, news radio stations are out there, by the internet, as if it's unique unprecedented, something that's brand new. It's not. Donald Trump is essentially George Wallace 2.0. If George Wallace and Ross Perot were to have a love child, politically it would be Donald Trump. That is essentially what Donald Trump is. The difference between, and I pointed this out months ago. Now, I was just watching MSNBC, and they started talking about the whole Trump-George Wallace comparisons. Mm-hmm. Now they're getting on to this. Rachel Maddow on MSNBC is about the only one besides me who's pointed this out previously. But when you look at the Trump campaign, it's essentially, you have to compare it to 1968, when George Wallace ran as an independent candidate for mm-hmm. the presidency. You look at the Trump rallies, the one in Chicago recently, which they had to shut down because people were throwing throwing their fists at each other, trying to fight, and pretty much fighting. If you look at those rallies and you look at the film of the George Wallace rallies, you have people being dragged out by cops, you have people and security, you know, people trying to get into fistfights, and of course you had George Wallace being sarcastic, putting all, you know, throwing out all kinds of jibes and jeers at people. You know, I'll make a direct comparison to mm-hmm. Wallace. Mm-hmm. Wallace was said at one rally, you know, you're allergic to two words, W-O-R-K and S-O-A-P. Trump at a rally at St. Louis, Missouri, just I think recently, a couple days ago, said, go home and get a job. What you see in Trump is the same basic appeal that you have with George Wallace, except it's much greater. Mm-hmm. Whereas George Wallace was appealing to basically the sort of disgruntled Caucasian or European-American, as I like to call it, vote, the blue-collar vote, sort of a working-class vote. Donald Trump is appealing to that working-class vote, but he's cutting into other sectors, moderate Republicans, for example. And, of course, even college-educated people.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Donald Trump sees himself as the candidate of the poorly educated. In fact, he stated that he loves the poorly educated, although he probably wouldn't want to be tagged as such. But if you look at the parallels between George Wallace and Donald Trump, they're mm-hmm. there. So it's nothing new. Of course, the major difference between Wallace and Trump was that Wallace was actually a politician. Trump is trying to be a politician.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Trump candidacy is nothing new. It's appeal to the idea that of American erosion, that America mm-hmm. isn't what it used to be, mm-hmm. that America has, they wrote it, much like a shoreline.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, water's coming in, water representing immigration, water representing people who aren't quote-unquote American,
mm-hmm.
people who are different from the sort of body politic, the polity of the United States, the mm-hmm. polity of America, that sort of, again, European-American, middle-of-the-road, or working class, tax-paying, voting individual.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very important. It's the sense of sort of political erosion, both economic and social and obviously political. It's the idea of erosion, American erosion, as I call it.
Right.
So that's very important in that game. So 1968 mm-hmm. is very important. On the Democratic side, you can also see that in the Hillary Clinton-Bernie Sanders race as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's parallels to 1968. In a sense, Bernie Sanders is kind of like two candidates. Eugene McCarthy, who's this insurgent candidate that rallied younger voters because he was anti-war, anti-Vietnam War. And Robert Kennedy, who was also an anti-war candidate and became a more charismatic figure.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the difference on that side is the sort of establishment figure, which was Lyndon Baines Johnson, who was president at the time, decided not to run after barely winning in New Hampshire in 1968. Hillary Clinton essentially represents the establishment, but she's not going to leave this race. She's running for president, as she did in 2008. So the parallels in history you could see are very, very adequate. And there are other parallels which I'll probably get into that link 1964, for example, and 1976. Those are other two mm-hmm. parallels in the election years.
Well, you know, in being fair, because to arrive at a fair and assessment, I guess, so people at least contribute to some understanding, Democrats, the reason I'm interested in this topic is that either we don't want to assign blame on either side because potentially, it has happened on the Democratic Party. People have died in 1866. Governor New Orleans ordered, the Democratic Party orders something to do with the GOP, and several people were killed. And there have been modern times, Democratic Party campaign gatherings have had violence, and they've arrested people. So, you know, it's like, well, look, they're pointing, the Democrats are pointing at Trump, and the Republicans are pointing at the Democrats. We, the people, are suffering because we really don't have, look at the choice we have today. We got one kid talking about the hands of a big man, and then we have the other guy saying we don't want anybody to come here, but they're foreign themselves in origin.
Right.
And so we need to, all of us need to step back and say maybe this partisan politics is crippling, and America has never taken. We're giving it away to the thugs and the liars and the cheats who will come along and antagonize us and rob us of basic freedoms. For example, who in their right mind would say to a president of the United States, of these United States, anyone, even a drunkard, probably would be reluctant to say, well, the Constitution allows four-year service per presidential term when you're elected.
Right.
But we've decided, because we don't like that black guy or whatever he is, Pickaninny, whatever they want to call him, and we don't want to work with him. And remember, this is going to be his Waterloo, you know, and on and on and on, and liar.
Uh-huh.
Well, if we have that kind of behavior, who is it that is presenting these problems? Well, we're not going to confirm or convene to consider the nomination of the Supreme Court justice, because we now have basically said, even though you have 4 years, the people, democratic process, voted you, and you have 4 years in each term, we're going to take that away from you by simply not participating with you. We're taking our ball and going home. That's it. And then they turn and tell us, as they run away with this nonsense, to say, we've lost our country. The Constitution is watered down. No, you are part of the problem. You are the problem, the Republican, in this process.
Mm-hmm.
You follow?
Right. Well, if you look at the Obama years, they'll come to a close next year, of course, 2017. But if you look at the Obama years, what it is historically is an extension, to some extent, of the Clinton years, though not entirely. The Republicans were obstructionists during the Clinton years, to some extent. There was a government shutdown in the Clinton years. There was a government shutdown in the Obama years. Where the difference is in the intent of the obstruction. The Republicans, their basic unifying factor is obstructing Obama. They're not unified in terms of anything else. In fact, they're a divided party. Historically, again, the idea of civil war, which you hear stated in the dominant media narrative, is nothing new to the Republican Party. They've had a civil war, in essence, for decades. The difference is that they are now controlled by conservatives and right-wingers, whereas before, take in 1964, when Barry Goldwater ran for office as president on the Republican Party ticket for the presidency, you had liberals and moderates. It's a full-service party. As to a certain extent, the Democrat Party was back then, too. What's changed is now you have, in the Republican Party, right-wingers fighting right-wingers. The Civil War is now a sort of even more segmented one, but a grand ideology, meaning the conservative right-wing ideology, but still segmented, still Civil War. So that's a dysfunctional party. What unifies the Democratic Party is the fact that all they need to do is oppose the GOP. They've, and I stated this on a show that I was on just earlier this week, the Robert Christian show. I said what the Democrats are is essentially conservatives, not political conservatives, but they're into conserving, as any real conservative would do. institutions and services. You know, when you look at a conservative, what is a conservative really? It's someone who believes in the status quo and someone who believes in institutions. Mm-hmm. What we have on the Republican side are not conservatives. They're right-wingers. Mm-hmm. And some of them are extremists, type Tea Party and beyond. So what Democrats are in are conserving. They're conservatives, in essence. We'll conserve Medicaid, we'll conserve Medicare, we'll conserve Social Security, we'll conserve the, we'll try to save the public schools, we'll try to do all of these programs and services. They become a service-oriented industry.
Right. So the one of the best examples, I believe, if we want to figure out our politics and not be bored with what you and I think, is to the Republicans. If they
I find what I think interesting. But
well, if you didn't, I'd look at you and throw you out of here.
That's true.
If a man don't believe in his own words, then I could, you know.
Well, then he'd be Donald Trump, but go on.
That goes without saying. Yeah. We'll just take notice of that. But the reality is I often, because I live here in Hawaii,
right,
and I know that all the theories and the finger pointing and the blame, why I'm interested in this subject alone is that this so-called democratic state,
yes,
we have the highest taxes, we get screwed, we wake up in the morning, we get screwed. We go to bed, we're getting screwed. Somebody's back there putting together laws, and we're in a democratic, primarily run government, right?
Yes, it's a blue state.
Whatever it is, it's enough
color
to
coding.
Make you see green or see red. Well, it might be blue, but
right.
Again, so I've often hoped that the Republicans will stop bashing the gay community.
Too late for that.
Well, but I'm just saying my wishes and all of those things, and quit talking about the black guy in the White House. And I saw one T-shirt says, "Let's bring back the white to the White House." You know, worn by. See, if they put their minds to something, they could look at, project on the state of Hawaii,
right,
and say, this is why we want to be your party of representing you. But
right.
Instead, it's telling women about the menstrual period. It's telling them they're going to take the country back. When we have the perfect example here of a government out of control, taxing the people, and when you mentioned the conservative aspect, they are, the Democratic Party here, they are evangelical and conservative, and take, for example, the same-sex issues, the issues on homelessness. They haven't resolved. We have the worst homeless issues there are in a democratic state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I go to bed sometimes thinking, why don't you guys give up on the Bible and the evangelical approach and leave it to God? And then come and do what you're a politician. You're in an atmosphere of politics.
Right.
Work on that. You know, forget who's falling in love with whom. That's none of your business. And
right.
What a woman should do with her uterus and all of those things.
Right.
Let's go back to, and the reason I say that, I'm looking for a better world,
right,
better political climate, so that we work our butts off.
Well, if you want a better political climate, I'd say get all the far-right religious types out of politics. They've really screwed up the American political system. They certainly have screwed up the Republican Party. That's part of the reason why the Republican Party is so dysfunctional in recent years. They're catering to the religious right, the fundamentalist aspects, and they are catering to people who only care about a theological perspective as a major block of that party. Actually, the blame to me about the evangelicals and the religious right should initially go to Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter actually ran with a lot of evangelical support in 1976.
And he's a
Democrat. That's the guy I initially blame for bringing in all this religious fundamentalism in the modern era.
And
people may be surprised that I say that.
Right, and he wasn't just here about peanuts. Hold on. Caller, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
You forgot to mention we get screwed even when we're dreaming here. When you're supposed to be living in paradise, and when you wake up, you're in hell. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
With the taxes and the suppression of the politicians that, you know, rule us in reality. They make the laws, and you got to go live by them. But my take on President Obama is what I think the festered and this resentment, and Trump is just using it. You know what I mean? mm-hmm. because it's like payback time now. We're going to get in there and we're going to do this, that, and the other. And Trump's, you know, little mind that he has. And he's a dangerous person. The American public better wake up. Because
right.
if he ever became president, man, there would be some really civil uprisings, as far as I'm concerned. Because the laws that he would want to put in place would be so suppressive that people would just snap.
Right. I think that's a very good point. And here's the interesting part. When you say that Trump is using the conditions and using rhetoric to stir people
yeah,
up,
no,
I think that's very accurate.
A couple of years, the conditions that yeah. made to this point has all been boiling, and now Trump is going to try to correct all the
right.
wrong stuff that Obama has done. You know, he's going to repeal this, that, and the other, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, oh yeah, that's going to be wanted anyway, you know?
Well, if you look at what his opponents, who are themselves pretty much useless politically, to be brutally honest, Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and John Kasich, if you look at what they've pointed out, some of their rhetoric, they say Trump sounds like he'll be worse in regards to executive orders than Obama. He'll be worse in terms of using the law and trying to craft the law than Obama. In their rhetoric, and they don't like Obama, but they say that a Trump president should be worse because it'll be almost like a dictatorship.
Then
I think that's accurate.
More suppressive. Yeah, well, he wants to be a dictator. That's his dream every night when he goes to sleep, I guarantee you.
From what he's stating, it sounds like he wants a dictatorship, in essence.
Donald Trump would be considered a crazy man, and nobody would pay attention to him if the Democrat in the state of Hawaii, if the Democratic Party would act accordingly and do what is right in the democratic process for the people. Don't tax them, don't screw them, don't rip them off. We're sending most of the people out of state to jails. We're fragmenting homes. We have homeless rates that they don't even participate in a healthy medical system. So what is happening is the Democratic Party, this is consistent with what you guys are saying, it's these people are flocking to Donald Trump, as sick as he is, because our Democratic leaders are forcing them. They have no, we've trusted
well,
them.
Well, you gotta, here's what you gotta, you're, I think you're conflating what the Hawaii
not
politics.
Conflating, no, that's an observation now. We don't conflate, I won't project on you
okay.
as a con. It's a simple observation that I have.
I understand. You know, I've been hearing for years people complain about, you know, taxes here and the Democratic Party. But when you look at local politics, let me just take the local angle of it first. We had a Republican Party caucus recently.
When you say local, now you're talking about some million people that live here.
1.3 million.
So first of all, let's
Hawaii politics.
Let's put the human aspect to it
right.
first, not just the political.
Right.
Go ahead. So,
but we had a Republican Party caucus here recently.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump won that here, 42%. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ted Cruz did very well. I mean, relatively well, 33% statistically. But if you look at Hawaii's Republican Party, they aren't a match for the Democratic Party here, and they haven't been for over 50 years. You know, they're a dysfunctional party, but in a different way from the Republican Party nationally.
Mm-hmm.
At least the Republican Party nationally is successful to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
They're winning legislatures. They're winning governorships. They've got the Congress. The Republican Party in Hawaii is a joke. It's dysfunctional.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been dysfunctional for years because they can't attract candidates, and they have no platform. They have nothing to offer. They've been running on the same get rid of the excise tax and the tax on food and medicine for I don't know how many years. I mean, I've been hearing this 21 years I've been a journalist.
Meanwhile, there's this little guy called the governor, David Ige, mm-hmm. who promised to fix things, and he's now proposing one of the most hellacious increases in fees of a tax of sort. So hopefully you understand. I'm not disagreeing. I'm speaking mm-hmm. in the same vein. But in order
right.
to figure out who took the country and how we're going to get it back
right.
is that we must call a crook a crook. And then not because Donald Trump and the Republican Party mentions it and brings it to our attention.
Right.
We already know the suffering
right.
and the loss of property and the migration of this population of people moving away because they can't afford to live in their own homeland.
Right.
So these are the realities. So the man with the little hands or the big hands has no plans, but he's attractive because the team that is supposed to be protecting us and have taken our trust and squandering it, we're flocking to Donald Trump, and that's scary.
Right.
So how are we going to fix that aspect? Caller, go ahead with your comment, question.
Thank you for taking my call. Two books that are absolutely apropos to what you're talking about is one, in 1935, Sinclair Lewis wrote, "It Can't Happen Here."
About fascism,
in
yes.
In 2007,
mm-hmm.
Joe Connison wrote, "It Can Happen Here."
Mm.
And it's all about big government.
I've actually read Joe Connison's book, yeah.
And big evangelicalism.
It. Yeah.
Ideology and religious zealots
right.
diminish liberty, promote war, etc.
Right.
And these two books, I mean, It Can't Happen Here, 1935, this is 2016. If you didn't know the date that this book was written, It Can't Happen Here, you'd say it today.
Well, that's a good point. I've actually read Joe Connison's book, and it's a quite interesting book. The conditions for what some people might call fascism, that you see a certain degree of with the Trump campaign, is a phenomena that has always been kind of rooted in this country. You know, it's nothing new. That one of the aspects that I'm pointing out here is that the Trump candidacy is a linked to historical factors in this country, to what we've seen in past election years, what we've seen historically in the context of politics in the United States. It's nothing new. It's not unique. The dominant media, the dominant news media, would like you to think that it's brand new, because for a lot of these younger reporters, they don't have the historical context. They don't have the context beyond the present to see what Trump is. And that's where history is very important, and that's where knowing a lot about politics also is very important, and seeing the parallels. And that and so what we're getting from what I say the dominant news media is not really the entire picture. But that's typical of the news. I've been in the news business for a long time. And it's not, remember that news is a product, that it's something that is created. It's not simply pure information. That there's a process, as I've said, collation, interpretation, and dissemination.
I think we lost a caller there, but he can mm-hmm. call back in. 524-1080, my guest is Mr. Lanier, and Albert Lanier, actually, and he's a freelance writer. We're discussing the Trumps and the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, politics. So 524-1080. But I marvel at the way that this process presents itself this year.
Yeah,
you have a guy who gets in Ben Carson, and you know, and sometimes people are quick when we see a person of color. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be African American. Involved with the Republican Party,
right?
The first thing come to mind in many people is he's an Uncle Tom.
Right.
Okay, not fair to label someone anything that you really don't know anything about them, but you just automatically—that's your a natural reflex. But once this person start to show you and give you cause mm-hmm. to characterize him, then it's fair assessment. For example, now, he started off saying the world was beautiful and great and everything was all fine. Okay? He's one person that squeezed through that immigration fence that Trump talks about. You know, he got a degree and he became a surgeon. But look where he stands now in the Republican Party. He's nothing more than a beef eater or someone that will hold the door for Donald Trump.
Right.
And where is his dignity? What does he stand for? You know, he mumbles. And I didn't see one single common sense policy that he presented.
He doesn't have policies. He has fantasies. If you listen to Ben Carson, he's clearly a damaged man. You know, he's a damaged man. You know, he obviously believes that, I guess pyramid power didn't really work for him, if you could say it that. You know, his belief that pyramids were warehouses. I don't see too many warehouses built like pyramids anywhere else. Squares, yes, but not pyramids. He's typical of, and I'll be blunt, he's typical of a lot of, sadly, people of color that are used as candidates in the Republican race. They attract some really damaged people.
Look at the history of Alan West and Alan Keyes.
Yeah, he's an outright loon. Yeah. Alan West, if you think Ben Carson has mental issues, just listen to Alan West.
Mm-hmm.
He's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I mean, the man is crazy.
But what it pays well, you see. And what the Republicans do understand, they know they're never going to support anybody, an African-American, a person of color, per se.
Right.
They're just not going to do that. Not what they're presenting us. You know, their attack is on Black Lives Matter and everything else.
Right.
And so, but bring him along in the beginning of the game and have him to sit there. Oh, the world is so beautiful, and I'm a lucky guy. I just persevered, and I worked hard.
Right.
And it comes to hard workers. Well, I can tell you there are people out there that work hard, but they have obstacles placed in their way, and they don't get to become the surgeon that they wanted
to. If you look at Carson's behavior, you know, you talk about working hard. I guess he worked hard at stabbing people on their belt buckle. He worked hard, I guess, at pushing his mom and attacking his mom.
Yeah.
If you look at what he said in response to those attacks, even the other candidates went, "What's with this guy?"
And
I mean, something's wrong with him. When you go out of your way to dispute the accounts of your biography and say, no, I really hit my mother.
Yeah.
It's like you're trying to live up to this, I got to be blunt, the stereotype that's been enforced about African Americans from what I see, this sort of kind of urban stereotype. He's trying to imply that he fit that stereotype and then surpassed it.
Yeah.
See, that's a part of what
grew
it is.
Out of it.
Yeah, he grew out of it. He grew out of
emerged out of it like a butterfly coming out of it.
out of the went from pupae, you know, from caterpillar to pupae to surgeon.
But he's still a worm. You know,
he's a worm all right.
and so to be liked by Donald Trump.
Right. And the worm turned. That's why he's endorsing Donald Trump.
And then you see he admits and corrects the listeners and the witnesses about the incident or the occasion of him with his mother in the act of violence.
Yeah.
And then in turn I'm thinking, isn't that funny? Donald Trump also professes violence.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that funny to have? And then what do? They gravitate to one another.
Right.
But in all fairness, let's go back to the Democratic Party, for example, the evangelical. We see now there's Tulsi Gabbard.
Well, I'll tell you this about Tulsi Gabbard.
Well,
I'm probably going to get a lot of calls about
that. Let me tell you my first part. I want to be first.
Okay, go ahead. No. Go ahead.
No, I mean, she's stealing the limelight. Purposely and strategically placing herself there. Now, I'm not the guys on the mainland and in Congress.
Right.
I don't remember anything she did here other than I deserve that, and I'm a veteran. I know a lot of veterans that she can't even pick up the phone and address their issues who's living on the bridge. You know.
Right.
I also question her involvement in her cult, but she says she's Hindu and all of that. I want to know.
Right.
But again, this is what. She's a member of the Democratic Party. She was their fairy child, right? Now all of a sudden she's out because the DNC and what have you.
Well, she's out of the DNC, correct?
I want to know. And I thought I had a lot of respect for Sanders over the years.
Bernie
I've heard
Sanders,
him talking.
Right? Yeah.
But I think he's the dumbest person there is to let Tulsi Gabbard without vetting her. Yes, she's in the military. Mm-hmm. Yes, she's been promoted. But let me see some scars. Let me see some PTSD. Let me see like the other soldiers have suffered and struggled. Mm-hmm. I know people here that have attempted to go through her office to get justice as veterans.
Right.
And she turns a cold ear, a deaf ear.
Yeah. So, I'm not surprised.
So, folks, I'm just telling you, they may like her,
right,
but I know about her.
Well, here's the thing about Tulsi Gabbard. I've been saying this for quite a while, and I wouldn't be surprised if a whole bunch of people call in and I get into...
Well, that's good.
And they don't like what I have to say. I've been saying this for quite a while now. Tulsi Gabbard is a phony. She's a fraud. She is a Republican under another name. She's not a true Democrat. At best, she's a blue dog Democrat. Her endorsing Bernie Sanders is a tactically shrewd move on her part. It's a shrewd move to shore her up as a supposed progressive, which she is not. She's basically someone who is a darling of the right-wing media. She's their favorite Democrat.
They love
her. Favorite Democrat. She appears on Fox News all the time.
Hey, what better way to have a Ben Carson, an Alan Keyes, and a Tulsi Gabbard
right.
to be on the inside going, yeah, those Democrats are, I've you know, and I'm a veteran, and I'm
right.
a general. No, she's
right.
a major now and got promoted.
Right.
But here, I've been receiving emails, people expressing
mm-hmm.
concerns. Now, I'm still checking that many of the people in her staff are
mm-hmm.
actually involved in her cult. In the office there. So
right.
I'm still trying to check that.
Well,
see, with Congress...
I don't know if you read Civil Beat with her chief of staff. The
mm-hmm.
person she hired as chief of staff, this guy has no political experience whatsoever. I mean, the guy ran like a health food company or something like that.
But his history is with the cult as well, I'm talking.
I'm not really surprised. She has people who don't know what they're doing in her office. She, like I said... Tulsi Gabbard is this sort of newfangled creation of the Democratic Party. The reason she won that election against Mufi Hanneman is Mufi wasn't able to do his usual dirty tricks against her. I don't know why.
Well, he was just exposed. We
right.
we learned before he you know he wanted
well,
to
Mufi
be
messed himself up by going against Neil Abercrombie and trying to play the race card against Neil when he ran for governor,
yeah.
and that damaged him. And so when he went to Mufi, I mean when he went against Tulsi. Tulsi demonstrated she had a pretty good – she ran a good campaign against
mm-hmm.
Mufi. You give her credit for that. But the fact of the matter is her idea that she was this fresh face is nonsense. She was a city council member before she got into Congress. She was a legislator before she got into Congress. How is that experience so-called fresh face?
Well,
she was not a newbie.
Let's gravitate back to Mufi. I want to make sure the listeners out there understand something. Mufi Hanneman failed because Mufi Hanneman is just a crook. Mufi Hanneman was a politician who finagled his way and used improperly the system to benefit himself and his friends.
Right.
That's why he lost. He didn't lose because Abercrombie ran. He ran against Abercrombie, and then that poster that says we're comparing. He lost because Mufi Hanneman had been defined by the people. His actions defined him, and we then responded appropriately by voting him out and, you know.
Well, he played, I mean, one of the reasons he lost to Abercrombie is he made foolish and moronic attacks against Abercrombie, who probably doesn't like. And the other thing is that Mufi has never really been a great vote getter. He managed to get elected to city council. He managed to get elected as mayor. And in my view, got elected as mayor partly because of dirty tricks against Duke Bainum. If you remember what happened in that election,
mm-hmm.
the rumors about Duke Bainum's wife, partly it was dirty tricks that helped get Mufi Hanneman elected. So if you look at...
Then.
I mean, if you look at him before, he tried running for Congress, couldn't get elected, against Neil Abercrombie years ago, couldn't get elected.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy who's never been... he's had some success in politics, but not as much success as he wants.
Well... I always like to – I pride myself in recognizing what the people, how they respond. The Hawaiian voter is rather intelligent. It's just sometimes they get – the way the media serves up things and shows – like today, the mayor, current mayor, gets to come on. If there's a pancake contest, he's there flipping pancakes and talking nonsense, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to millions being squandered on city projects – the media don't stick the camera in his face. But when he got pancake mix on his lips and, you know, and sticky fingers from the syrup because he cares, it's a message that lead us down the slaughter path, to the slaughterhouse as voters. And we we think, oh, the media vetted him.
I don't know that I'd make a good slogan for his reelection. Caldwell, the guy you can have breakfast with. I don't know that it would work.
Yeah, or what a sticky mess he left us in.
Right. Well, the reason Caldwell is mayor anyway is because he's the tool of the rail interests. That's
right.
Why he got elected. They supported him. And when Caetano ran against him and ran on an anti-rail campaign, he had millions of dollars thrown against him by all the pro-rail interests.
Right.
And so the reason why Caldwell's there is because he's a tool of the rail interests.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he's mayor. And so far, he's done an okay job for those interests.
Yeah.
Not for voters in Honolulu, but for the interests. For those interests.
We're going to take 1 minute here and answer this call. Let you caller real quick. Go ahead with your comment and question.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Murphy Hanneman was responsible for steel wheel on steel rail. In 08, he said that's a Pono thing to do. The Trojan horse is the rail, and it's primarily there because of transoriented development. It's about land. It's about power. Mm-hmm. And I've got many instances of Murphy's criminal activities. The panel that was picked by Murphy, they met in City Hall. They used their equipment. They met in their offices. And the four panel members recommended steel wheel on steel rail, regardless of magnetic levitation, monorail, or any other system.
Well, we're going to take a break here, Rick, in next hour. Call back and share more with us on that.
Okay, thank
All
you
right.
very much.
Thank
you. Bye.
Right. But he's right about Hanneman being pro-rail. Mm-hmm. He was pro-rail. And it paid off, obviously, more for Caldwell than for Hanneman, obviously. But Caldwell himself has been kind of a divisive figure, not only because of rail, but also because of the homeless situation.
Right.
He really, I mean, his whole take on the homeless situation is to set up this camp in Sand Island.
Right. Yeah, well, hold that thought, and we're going to come back in the next hour. This is the Carol Cox Show. My guest is Albert Lanier, and we're just talking politics. Oh, by the way, this is Donald Trump. He's singing to his audience.
What do you want to do?
See, when you got big hands, you sing like this.
I'm ready.
We'll be back shortly.
I'm waiting on you. Believe me. I am patiently waiting. Something wrong with me. Every time I'm alone with you, you keep talking about you loving me. Hey, baby, your foreplay just blows my mind. So why don't we stop all the talking, girl? Why don't we stop wasting time? I've had my share of lovers. Some say I'm damn good, and if you think you can turn me out, baby, I'm worse than you. 'Cause you keep telling me this and telling me that. You say once I'm with you, I'll never go back. You say there's a lesson you wanna teach. Well, here I am, baby, practicing what you.
The second half of the Carol Cox Show, right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K101.
I went out but I always lose the war. I keep right on stumbling, and there's no man's land out here. But I know, yes, I know, there must be a better world. Flying high, some joker clips my wings just because he gets a kick out of doing those kind of things. I keep on falling in space or just hanging in midair. But I know, just gotta be a better world somewhere. Every woman I want.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, the second half. Thank you for joining us. CarolCox.com is the website, or you can go to KWAI1080AM.com and pick us up on podcast. Or streaming live. 524-1080 is the number. We got two calls here. My guest is Abbott Lanier, and a freelance writer, and we're talking about politics. And so join in. Caller, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your comments or question.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, your guest stated that Alan West is a complete cuckoo bird or something. Did he mean Alan Keyes?
No. Alan West. Alan West was a member of Congress.
Yes. And
so not Alan Keyes. Alan Keyes actually ran against.
No,
he was brought in to run against Obama in Chicago, actually in Illinois, for the U.S. Senate race. What happened was that a guy called Ryan had run in that race, and he was knocked out because of his divorce. He was married to, I believe, an actress called Jerry Ryan, and his divorce. Papers and his divorce, you know, all his materials relating to his divorce came out, and he was into a lot of sexually kinky and perverted things, I guess, in regards to his wife. I mean, it was really salacious, and so that changed the tenor of the race, and so they tried to have parachute politics and bring in Alan Keyes, and Alan Keyes lost to Obama. There's no chance he was going to beat Obama, and Obama won the U.S. Senate race. He went on to give, he went on to give an address at the Democratic Party convention in 2004. That was a quote unquote electrifying. It really established him nationally.
Yeah, so you're saying Alan Keyes is a cuckoo bird,
Alan West is.
Alan West.
I said congressman, former congressman. He's not in Congress
anymore.
Yeah,
former congressman Alan. So
he's the
I just want to get that straight.
Alan West is the.
Military hero, yeah.
No, more like military zero, but he's mentally unbalanced. I mean, you listen to the comments that he made, not only running for office, but also as a congressman. There's some really big deficiencies there mentally with the man. His intelligence and his mentality is. His mental health is questionable.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, one more thing. Carol was talking about vetting Tulsi Gabbard and all that, and she's in a cult.
Well, he was mentioning fact that he's, Sanders. She had supported Sanders, but...
No, I understand that, but he was mentioning a cult that her
religion... Carol is right here, so you don't have to speak in third party.
You stated that she's in a cult, or...
Yes.
Hindu cult?
I didn't say Hindu. She's in a cult. That's and she says
but
she's
you said Hindu.
She says she's Hindu.
Okay, but you mentioned a call.
Are you the attorney for her or what? Get to your point.
Yeah. That's one of the points I wanted you to clarify. And here's
Well, then say that.
Worried about vetting.
Right.
Were you so concerned about the cult that Obama was going to with Reverend Wright in his church? Anti-American.
That's not a cult.
Well, you see, this is why the Republicans are where they at right now. You know, because of this really, in all honesty, I'm no enemy of the Republican Party. I've voted Republican in the past for presidents and what have you. But what turns me off is that once they take out a single action, like this is a black president, and you put out people like Carson and other Alan Keyes and Alan West, and you guys love them because they're your token. And then you never intend to put them and appoint them to any positions of importance, but you use them.
Right.
The game is over, man. It's time for everybody. No. It's time for everybody, to include you, to understand that when you play these games, these are human beings. We, the observers, are human beings. We can deduce for ourselves what's right and wrong, what's abusive, what's disrespectful.
So you have no problem with Obama being with a known terrorist, Bill Ayers, and having associations? That was really vetted
They also said Martin Luther King was a communist, so where do you want to start?
Well, first of all, your point is that he was in a cult. Actually, he was a member of a church. I don't know if you would characterize a church, especially I think it's Reverend Wright or whatever his name was. Right, you stated that it was a cult. So no. You compared it. You said it was a cult. It's not a cult. If you're going to make a criticism, and if you're going to make a comparison, make an accurate one.
Yeah,
and you didn't make an accurate one. So your attack, if you could call it that, is invalid. Next time, try coming up with some facts before you come on a program like this and start talking about it.
What I would recommend...
No, he stated that it was a cult. He didn't say anything about Hindus.
Look back on... He said it.
Right, he said it was a cult. He said it was a cult.
Here's what I recommend you do. Contact... You've heard me say what I said. The logical thing for you to do, if you dare to do this, is contact Tulsi Gabbard and ask her to tell you her employees and tell you her involvement, because she's a congresswoman and she has many issues of concern that is our concern. So she has an obligation. So why don't you do that and report back to me? Will you do? Can you do that?
Yeah.
Okay, do that. No. Don't fear the truth. I just
fear the truth, sir.
Well, okay. I understand.
Yeah.
Well, anytime, this is a guy who calls with no name, so you're the typical...
And he has no facts.
Yeah, no facts.
He has no facts,
name.
Just attack. He has no facts. All he can do is he's making an invalid.
Yeah.
It's a false equivalency, invalid premise.
Roy Ayers is a really good jazz player, I know that.
Is Bill Ayers a terrorist?
I don't know. Ask Bill Ayers that.
You guys answer that, or you don't want to answer it?
Well,
I don't know. Ask Bill Ayers that.
See, this is.
They'll come on this show and start making false equivalencies and false premises.
Look it up.
This is
well. I'm not here to do what you're interested in doing. Okay.
Oh, really?
That's right. I don't work for you. I work for me. Okay.
Yeah.
So
anyway.
Yeah. Right on.
Horse with no name. You know, I don't know what to call you or who to respond.
A man with no name.
Huh? Why do you need to know my name?
Well, I mean, if you're gonna.
Well, he has no facts, so why would he put his name up? He says no facts and no name. That's
a terrorist.
Okay, well, anyway.
You guys can't handle it.
No, I know. We can't.
Well, you can't handle it because you don't have the facts.
Yeah, so.
I have the facts.
You can't handle the truth, as they would say in A Few Good Men.
So, and we're going to conclude.
He was on the run.
We're going to conclude this conversation, but here's the thing.
I'm going to hang up on you before you hang up on me like you've done in the past.
Go ahead.
Well, I think he's got a vendetta against you, Carol. It sounds like he's got some history with you.
Well, you know, but if I was as passive as Ben Carson and come in and go...
Well, you're not crazy like that.
How are you all doing? Can I carry a water?
Oh, my God.
And by the way, this is why you should never, you know, do certain things to yourself. You shouldn't work on your family if you're a doctor, practice medicine on them.
Right.
And you shouldn't do brain surgery on yourself, because you might put the lobes in the wrong side,
right?
And you end up talking about pyramids being grain bins, and you just
maybe it's kind of like young Frankenstein. He got the wrong brain,
and he's a cut up man. So.
Yeah.
Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your comments and question.
Hello, are you available now?
Am I available now?
available for
talk. I am on the internet, and it seems that you're still talking.
Well, go ahead with your comments. You have a comment?
Yes, I wanted to refer back to the your comments about Mayor Caldwell squandering millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm Chun James, and I just want to again say that for this budget hearing, this year budget hearing, the mayor is quietly asking for $6.6 $5 million for his pet Neiman Marcus firehouse in Haula.
Okay.
Now, mind you, he has already squandered $2.4 million of federal funds, which we call the Community Development Block Grant.
I've heard of those grants. Yeah.
Yeah, and this block grants, ironically, it's supposed to be used to help low and moderate income communities improve their living environment and expand economic opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
But what does this mayor do? He's shutting down the last two commercial lots in Haula. He has shut down the recycling where the homeless people have recycled every day so that they can buy themselves a hot meal. And yet, this mayor is quietly abusing those funds for his pet project.
Well, you have to look at the fact that Caldwell, again, as I mentioned before, he's a puppet of the rail interests. So he's going to do what's financially advantageous for those special interests that got him into office, whether they're the rail interest or other kinds of financial special interests. So it doesn't surprise me. What you're bringing out here wouldn't surprise me. I haven't looked into the whole community block grant aspect.
Okay.
But it doesn't surprise me.
Well, thank you, Chun.
But the public ought to know about it.
I agree.
And if they want to, they can Google for more information.
Especially in election year.
Yeah, on eminent domain abuse Hawaii, and they will find a lot of information there about the secret life of Mayor Caldwell that not a lot of people know about.
Okay, well, we'll go there. Go with that website again.
And that's another interesting aspect.
What's the website again?
Eminent Domain Abuse Hawaii on YouTube. You just go on YouTube and you will find lots of information in there. You know, this mayor has a secret life out here in the rural Oahu that not a lot of people knows about. You know, last week at the budget hearing, his people were saying, "Oh, you know, we are doing working so hard to help improve economic opportunities, and we're doing this and we're doing that," and yet quietly, he is shutting down these last two commercial lots that the people really need for small business opportunities,
mm-hmm.
so that he can build his $13 million fire mansion that the people do not want over here.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you. We'll talk it up. We'll pick up the subject later on. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
That doesn't really surprise me.
Carla, go ahead with your comments or question. Thanks, Maria.
Yeah, I want to talk about the party that wants to keep wages low. Especially, they hate regulations. They're pro big business and private developers. They want to privatize everything, like prisons and the military and so on. They do not believe in separation of church and state because theirs is the only God, and they got to send missionaries all over the world to make sure the whole world is under the same God. Now, that party, that definition would seem to fit the Republican Party. However, the point I'm trying to make is that those are the same characteristics of many of the Democrats today in government. And so the Democrats they're really Republicans, and they take on the name Democratic because most of the people are Democrats here. And that's a big contrast to the original Democratic Party here, which was where the labor unions for the plantation laborers and so on were fighting for, you know, a decent life. So this, the powers that be, in terms of the outcome of the decisions that are made, are Republican-style decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that maybe the national, what do you call it, the National Democratic Party, whatever you call it, chairman kind of thing.
The DNC.
Yeah, DNC. They should demand that these political parties, you know, stand for what the party is, the philosophy of the party they claim they belong to.
Well, that's something that I've heard often expressed, the whole idea of Democrats in Hawaii acting like conservatives.
Yeah.
Really, when you look at Democrats here in Hawaii, they're basically centrist politicians. They're certainly not to the left. You do have a progressive wing of Democrats here.
That's true.
Who are supporting Bernie Sanders, by the way, because I know mm-hmm. people in the Democratic Party
mm-hmm.
here. So you do have a left and a progressive Democratic Party. But, of course, it's when you look at the Hawaii State Legislature, it's the more centrist and, to some extent, conservative Democrats that really rule the roost there.
Well, sure, because you just look at, for instance, the railroad and all of the
rail,
development.
Yeah.
And you look at the concrete jungle out mm-hmm. there. That's all typical, you know.
Right.
That's typically Republican in terms
point,
of big business
and
profiteering.
And a point that you brought up is mm-hmm. very important. When you hear politicians, not just here in Hawaii but elsewhere, talk about jobs,
mm-hmm.
the problem in Hawaii is not jobs. The problem, people can go and get jobs.
Yeah,
the problem
right.
is the larger economy here in Hawaii. One of the things that I've brought out, not only online, whether it's Civil Beat Threads or elsewhere, I've stated for Hawaii to improve for most of its people, what you need to do is raise wages
exactly.
and lower prices. That's the very basic core.
Well,
the problem is wages here in Hawaii.
Well, yes, and when you got a service economy, that's
right,
what you're going to get. Is and you know, that's not going to change.
No, because
that's not
Hawaii
gonna change because
right.
McDonald's isn't going to give people, you know, $15-$20 an hour,
no.
and that's unfortunate. But they make a lot of profit.
Well, here's the thing. It's funny. I went by a McDonald's some time ago. I went by a McDonald's. It was about $8.75 an hour,
mm-hmm.
and I guess now it was like $9.25. So mm-hmm. yay, they've raised it 75 cents or so. But one of the points that I always try to make to people here
mm-hmm.
is the problem. One of the problems with Hawaii is that the rents and the mortgage prices, the house prices, have gone up exponentially.
Yes.
And the wages have not kept up with the cost of living here. They haven't kept up with prices. So what the businesses here want is they want to pay people modest wages. You mentioned service economy. That's a great part of it because the two major industries here,
yeah.
military is essentially an industry.
Well, when they don't kick in, they don't pay taxes here. They buy all their stuff without right. having to pay excise tax in their stores on the bases, and they don't pay
right.
income tax here, state
right.
tax.
Yeah, and you have tourism, which is, of course, the major driving
yeah,
industry.
The big one.
And the tourism industry is not a high-wage industry. It's always been a modest,
that's
low-wage
right.
industry.
That's right. There's a service industry.
Right.
Yeah,
so
I
the
agree.
Problem is that the economic structure of Hawaii has always been very low-wage. You go back to the plantations, mass agriculture, as I call it, very low-wage.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, worse in a sense than tourism.
Okay, Carla, anything else?
Yeah, I just want to say maybe one more thing. That... well, no, never mind. That'll be for another call. Bye.
Okay. Yeah, there's no one silver bullet in this situation, but I can tell you, if the Democratic Party acted responsibly and do what the people are choosing, and because each year there's a campaign between a Republican, a Democrat, and a Green, right, and independents. So the choices are there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the Democrats...
Well, it's the illusion of choice.
Well, no, it's a choice.
It's not a real choice.
Well, no, wait. There is a choice. The ballot has multiple names on it in multiple parties. Now, whether you might think that not that much of the parties that are named or that make it on the ballot, but they're there. It's still a choice. Now, again, what my bigger point is, the Democratic Party has squandered the trust of the people and is abusive and disrespectful, and they won't even respond. I mean, this isn't about political philosophies and understanding and trying to analyze it. This is just everyday common man responsibilities. They go to, if they have a problem in the workplace, you go there and your case and you file a complaint. The OSHA is corrupt. The Ethics Commission is corrupt. So anything that a civilized individual that would trust in a democratic process, the people are robbed of that. It's just not there. They've stacked it. They've put their friends in with special interests. So when we look at turning our sights on the Republican Party, we must also be responsible in saying, well, somebody's screwing the monkey already, and the Republicans are not in place, so who is doing that? So we have to come to realization with that. Until we do that, we will never. This state will, it's going to drown itself in taxes, fees, and over costs, excessive costs.
Well, first and foremost, the point that you're bringing out implies that there's a political solution to the problems in Hawaii, and there isn't. The solution has to come, as I mentioned, economically. If you were to get rid of the Democratic Party in Hawaii and put in the Republican Party, it wouldn't change economically, because the structure of Hawaii overall in terms of its economy has been a low-wage, singular industry, mass employment sort of type of system here. It's been that way for decades and decades.
So what are you proposing? The response and the solution is to that all business become kumbaya and have a great meeting and then give money, fair labor prices and costs and hourly wages to the. Do we wait for that, or you say there is no political solution?
No,
there's no political solution.
No.
Then do we wait for our legislators to give in and see the light one day? What about the political solution being you vote their asses out?
Well,
you can't dismiss that. That's a solution.
Well, if you're seeking
politically,
if you're seeking an economic remedy from political means, you're not going to get it. If you vote in Republicans, it's not going to improve Hawaii.
But that's one aspect. But still, the solution is because the people that make legislation are political. So when you say there's no political solution, you're going to have to at least flirt with the political system as it's a political solution. Because if you don't, you still have the same clowns sitting in there refusing to approve legislation or pass legislation to increase income. Also, that same body goes ahead and appoints a PUC commissioner who then go ahead and increases the fee taxes on fuel, giving Matson and other shipping companies the right to raise their fees. So there's a political solution.
Well,
it may not be the perfect solution, but it starts to address some of it.
Well, again, if you're looking for a political solution to economic problems, you're not going to find it in the political system. But if you are looking to solve political problems, corruption, and ineffectiveness in government, then you have to change some of the people in government. Not necessarily elect Republicans, but you have to elect candidates that are going to be able to at least provide some kind of reforms.
Now, here's my question, then, and while we're on the subject. We're saying that there is no real political solution
to economic problems.
So now, you having drawn that conclusion, mm-hmm. what then is the alternative in your mind? That it's one thing to say this won't work,
right,
and this doesn't apply.
Mm-hmm.
From you, what specifically are you proposing?
Me?
Well, I mean, if you're going to say it's broken, but
right.
the solution is not this, and then it's not
right.
that, but then I would assume that then you have given equal time to mm-hmm. coming up with the solution. Here's your golden opportunity
right.
to let the cat out of the bag.
Well, again, you have to look at what kind of problem you're looking to address. If you're looking at political problems, then yes, they have to be dealt with in a political way. You can do that by choosing to get involved in third parties, libertarian or Republican. In Hawaii, that's a cul-de-sac. You're not going to get anywhere doing that. Basically, to get anywhere politically in Hawaii, you have to be a Republican who runs as a Democrat.
Right.
Which is
so
essentially what Dulce Gabbard is. It's what other people are.
So is that the solution you're proposing?
It's not the solution I'm proposing. It's the reality. That's what some people are actually doing.
Okay, but I'm asking
in terms
you
of
who analyzes, right. If you would share with us.
If you talk about political, you talked about economic situation, mm-hmm. It's very clear what the solution or part of the solution has to be. You have to, the private sector, which is what I always turn to, the private sector has to get its act together. The private sector has to make things better for Hawaii. They're not making things better for Hawaii. They're taking money, note those corporations from elsewhere,
right.
That do business here, professionals that do business here, whether they're consultants or other individuals, even local businesses, corporations or big businesses.
Mm-hmm.
It's a it tends toward monopoly.
Right.
The reason why you don't have a super ferry here basically is because you had interests like Young Brothers that wanted to keep their monopoly or their domination of the market, and that's it.
And one of the other reasons is that they didn't bother. They thought they were bigger and better mm-hmm. than the law in requiring an environmental impact
precisely.
Statement. But that, you know, it
right.
wasn't, you know. So I'm just seeking the opportunity
right.
to say when someone say this won't work,
right.
you know, and not to be at odds or
no, I understand that.
It's I believe that if I'm going to waste a listener's time or consume their time,
right.
I want to try at least share them the truth
right.
and insight.
Right.
And it does present a political solution in part. There's no perfect situation, but we got to start somewhere. Right now, there's no containment, no control. I mean, you wake up tomorrow, there'll be some other introduced bill to tax you again, or you know, it's just rampant. And even lawmaking, the making of laws, mm-hmm. legislating is kind of cockeyed
right.
because they stick us with laws. You know, I mean, we're worried about people crossing the sidewalk and looking at their cell phones. When there are senior citizens that can't get medical care, mm-hmm. some senior citizens are eating dog food. We have the homeless people sleeping in the bed of the river. You know,
yeah, you were telling me about that over the phone yesterday.
And they're worried about. They're on one hand, they're doing this to protect the public, the citizens,
right.
by making it illegal to walk across the street and own a cell phone or on a electronic mm-hmm. gadget. But then it's okay for them to live in riverbeds. It's okay them to have them, like you pointed out, to be on Vineyard Street and living on the bridge
right.
and with the feet sticking out in the street. It's okay for that.
Right.
So it's chaos.
I mean, I just saw homeless coming here to these studios, K108. I just saw, not far from here, you have homeless with tents set up, right not too far from where we are. The homeless situation, like I said, I was on a show in Seattle a couple days ago, a call-in to a Seattle Rubber Christian show. That guy asked me about homelessness in Hawaii,
yeah.
which was a surprise because most people in Hawaii, I mean, outside of Hawaii, do not know that homelessness is a major issue here.
Because who would have thought that paradise would present such a place?
Right.
But the reality is, I think what most people are surprised is that they fail to remember that we are human beings that occupy these spaces in Hawaii.
Right.
Human beings. And that comes with all the frailties and all the political influences, all the religious influences, all
yeah.
of those biases and personal.
Right.
And so, therefore, we end up getting
right.
unchecked government. And,
right.
and I'm a firm believer that I believe we could fix it tomorrow. We could start with term limits. And what I mean by term limits politically, is that you get to run for 2 years or two consecutive terms in any office. That doesn't mean then you go back and go put in then for a House of Representative from city, you were a city council, you exhausted that, and then now you change seat. No, you have to have at least 4 years in separation between any political position.
Well, that would be a nice beginning common sense political reform. You can't run for another office. I don't think that would happen because you would be inhibiting, you know, that would be inhibiting people from running for office. They would argue, oh, you're punishing us.
But they're already ascribing to that anyway.
Right.
They're already accepted it. City council, you get two terms. So it's nothing
right.
new, see.
Then you go run for something else. You
but and that's my point. See, we say, no, this is,
right.
you become that, that becomes the law of the land.
That would be actually a very good start. That would be a nice little piece of political reform.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, especially.
Not when you have politicians who are running for every kind of office.
You know what? You're just too optimistic.
Yes.
Good morning, Mr. Cox.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
I'm okay. I like to read what Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter to Henry Lee in August 10th of 1824. He said, men by their constitutions are naturally divided into two parties, those who fear and distrust the people and wish to draw all powers from them into the hands of a higher class. This. Number two, those who identify themselves with people, having confidence in them, cherish and consider them as the most honest and safe, although not the most wisest depository of the public interest. In every country, these two parties exist, and in everyone where they are free to think, speak, and write, they will declare themselves. So let me give you my take on this, what Thomas Jefferson said in his letter to Henry Lee. The fear and distrust of people have caused people to look to Donald Trump as that higher class being, even though he's bombastic in his ways and his approach, he does have an intuitive skill that is very much to admire. And
well, you can admire him, I don't.
And then also, this higher class is, Ben Carson said that Donald Trump is also cerebral driven.
Well, you have to consider the source there. When Ben Carson says that someone is smart, I wouldn't believe it.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, anyway,
consider the source.
That's my take on this higher class. Of course, people are looking for that Messiah who lived by the higher standards and higher hopes for the America and Hawaii. That's why they epitomize such people who are very charismatic in their ways.
Right.
And
well,
as to the idea of fascism, we have a three branch of government taken from the Bible in Isaiah 33.
Well, no. The three branches of government has nothing to do with the Bible. That derives from the Constitution. It's not biblical. There's nothing biblical about the tripartite structure of the United States. The government of the United States has nothing to do with the Bible. It's not religious. It's wholly secular. So before you get into that, forget it. I mean, again, you got another caller here who's not dealing with facts.
Well,
you
got to
have facts here and dealing with. You want to deal with government, you want to deal with facts, you got to deal with the facts here. Not fantasies. Not your opinion, not your interpretation of how the government is derived and where the government comes from.
And Thomas Jefferson was rather prolific, and if you didn't know any better, you'd say he was a great man. But mm-hmm. is this the same guy that was sexing up his slaves?
Yeah, and the guy who cut up his Bible.
Yeah,
I mean he.
I'm just wondering.
He was not an orthodox.
But the caller to make sure.
Well, he can't handle the truth.
There's several Thomas Jeffersons out there in the world, because there could be the Thomas Jefferson and the other Thomas Jeffersons that the Thomas Jefferson owned.
Right.
You know, and so we got to be careful. And then do we? You know, he was quite eloquent, and I mean the writings, and it guides us supposedly.
If you look at the real Thomas Jefferson, first of all, he was essentially non-religious. He ended up non-religious.
Being non-religious.
Yeah, he was a guy who would slice through his Bible, for obvious reasons I won't go into, but. When you see, look at this program, it's interesting that I'm the guest here, because I've had to set these people straight. The guy that you had on previously who kept ranting and raving about a cult, Obama's a cult, and you had this person trying to state an outright lie that the U.S. government is based on the Bible, which it's not. It's a wholly secular and a non-religious government. This is one of the problems with the American populace right now.
Mm-hmm.
You have people who are wholly ignorant of the facts. Not all of them, but a number of them. And so when you look at Trump, getting back to Donald Trump, he loves the poorly educated.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that in a couple of the callers you just had.
But you notice you never saw Trump being responsible or a distributor of Bibles. He has kinds of business.
He went to Liberty University and said 2 Corinthians. Now, I'm not a religious person, But even I know, someone who is not religious at all, even I know it's 2 Corinthians, not 2.
Yeah.
And this is a so-called religious person?
But the Republicans will say that you're picking on him. But see, the standard is Obama.
And he's picking on everything
else.
Right.
But they'll pick you to pieces on the things that they want to make.
Right.
Points they want to express. But when it comes to, so, you know, let's talk about this thing about the Trump and how we get there. Well, it came to me a long time ago that when people say, the N-word is so terrible. Mm-hmm. I don't use that, and you shouldn't use it either. And so everything related to and people, they take ownership or lay ownership to it. For example, Black Lives Matter. Oh, go out there and challenge that, right? Mm-hmm. Just send some thugs out there, ignorant, the ones that's going to vote for Trump, and just challenge them on it, you know. Look at Fox. When the last time did you turn on TV and saw Fox say, that was a illegal shooting, a violation of the civil rights of that individual? No shooting was ever wrong in the eyes of Fox that they presented.
Well, you got to keep in mind who's behind Fox News, Rupert Murdoch and Roger Ailes. Roger Ailes, as the head of Fox News, well, Rupert Murdoch's Australian News Corporation owns Fox News. But you look at Roger Ailes. Roger Ailes worked for Richard Nixon back in the late 60s.
Yeah.
He's basically not a newsman.
Right.
He's a Republican spinmeister. He's a political tactician. So when you have a political tactician of the right owning a so-called news network, what do you expect?
Now, Alan West and Alan Keyes and those guys, the person.
The guy couldn't even get him right.
Right.
Who shows you what he thinks of, I guess, certain
but
people.
But here's what's rather noticeable, and that is when you read what Alan West writes, it seems to be anything to deal with a black person involved in something. See there? This is exactly what the Republicans are telling you. You can't trust the black people. They're criminal. They're motivated criminally. And you know, they're less than human beings. All of the ignorant people. You ever see Alan West feature any black person of prominence?
Well, no, because,
because that's
he
not
isn't a black person of prominence. That's the problem. Here's what you got to understand.
He was a colonel, you see, and by being a colonel, you fail to remember.
And he
that.
Has a kernel of intelligence. Not much, but a kernel of it. But here's the thing that you got to look at people like Alan West, Alan Keyes, Ben Carson. You got to keep in mind with, I'm not an expert on the African American community. You probably have more knowledge of that than I would. But here's what you got to look at. When you
can
look
you
at the
dance?
No comment. But when you look at these so-called conservatives within the African-American community, they are the first people to attack people within their own community.
Mm-hmm.
They are never the people that will stand up and defend other African-Americans. They're the first to attack. They're worse than even Caucasian conservatives or European-American conservatives, as I call them. They're worse than that. So they're the first person to go after Black Lives Matter. They're the first person to go after Obama. Mm-hmm. They hate Obama worse than Caucasian Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the way Ben Carson talks about Obama.
Yeah.
You look at someone like Stacey Dash,
right?
Who an actress who was appropriately in a movie called Clueless, because it's what she is, what she called Obama on the air on Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
These guys hate Obama more than even Caucasians do. And so these are, as I mentioned, damaged, angry, messed up people.
And willing to, you know, I have friends, and some of them are no longer friends because...
I can see why.
Because I become familiar when they say, well, you know that damn Obama, he done screwed up this nation, and 8 years, we got to take our country back. Now, I'm African-American, and what I know to be true, if you tolerate George Bush or Ronald Reagan, all of a sudden he's a Republican, or any of that nonsense and the crazy things, that the imprisonment and the lying of Richard Nixon and all Ollie North and all of that whole collection of thieves. And then you sit here and tell me about an African-American man who is useless, and you talk about his wife. I'm sorry, guys, but see, that's nothing to do with politics. That's just pure, unadulterated hatred.
But it is related to politics, because if you look at the way the Republican Party is currently constituted, what they did from the 60s, what the Civil Rights Movement did, and the Civil Rights Act, the passing of it, is it basically created a movement away from the Democratic Party, the Southern reactionary racist wing of the Democratic Party.
The Dixiecrats.
Yes, among others.
Mm-hmm.
They started filtering into the Republicans. This is part of the Southern strategy of the Republican
Strom
Party.
Strom Thurmond.
Yeah, if you look at guys like Strom Thurmond.
The Governor Maddox. And
if you look at Dick Armey, for example, former Democrat, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Phil Graham was a former Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Perry, who was governor of Texas, was a former Democrat. He was a creation of Karl Rove, basically,
mm-hmm.
politically. Karl Rove basically got Rick Perry to switch over to the Republican Party, and Rick Perry became governor. So when you look at this shift, the South shifted from Democrat to Republican. And so the Republican became the new home of the racist, reactionary, white supremacist, white nationalist ring. So when you look at Trump, what Trump has done, and I hate to analyze him like this, but I'll just offer you my analysis of Trump. The closest to calculation that Trump has come, 2011 when he moves against Obama and challenges him in terms of the birther movement, was the foundation basically for his presidential run now.
Mm-hmm.
Because what he's doing is he's playing to the far right. So he's got the white nationalist, the white supremacist, the racist vote. That's why David Duke is supporting Donald Trump. And he's getting the far right.
Right.
And he's moving onward from the far right. And that's been a key to his success.
I'm going to share a thought with you that I quite often have, and that is, you hear them, the right-wingers saying, we're going to do away with, if you elect me, I'm going to do away with the IRS.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there are other agencies, too.
Right.
But the IRS, you see, social programs are funded by the tax dollars.
Right.
That are taken and, you know, and distributed, right, or collected by the IRS. So, in essence, what I believe, it's a grand scheme to just permanently remove any funding that could be used for social-funded programs.
Oh, yeah.
And we're not getting that. And so that's the ultimate, in my opinion, extreme example of hatred, mm-hmm. bigotry, and the party that is claiming that is them. When I hear them say, I want to get rid of the IRS, and mm-hmm. I will, that what they're saying is that we're not going to be taking tax dollars from us rich folks and well-to-do white folk, and then going to fund for people of color and the less fortunate or even less fortunate income
right.
of whites or whatever. We're just not going to do that. So we're going to, that 1%, mm-hmm. we're going to do away with it. That's what they're saying.
Right. Well, this has been going on for quite some time. The Republicans have wanted to get rid of a number of cabinet departments,
mm-hmm.
Department of Energy, Department of Education. They've been saying this for decades. They were saying this when Reagan came to office. I guess the IRS is one of them. So this is long been part of the Republican game plan. They haven't succeeded in getting rid of departments, just like they probably won't succeed in getting rid of the IRS. And remember, the Republican Party, as I mentioned before, is at war with each other. They're mad. Part of the reason some of these Republicans are voting for Trump is they're mad at the Republican leadership.
Yeah. Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your comments or question.
Yeah, Carol.
Yes.
I really like the work that you do, but boy, I gotta call a spade when it comes to Obama. The man is irrefutably a hypocrite and a liar.
Mm-hmm.
He's a liar. Remember, he said, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan.
Mm-hmm.
If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. And he knew damn well that wasn't the case.
Right. And on the other side of the aisle, was there someone sent to hell with his health bills and health program? We're not going to fund it. We're going to do everything, and it's going to be his Waterloo. So how does a man succeed in carrying out anything when he's being fought by half of the or more than half?
So you concede the point.
No, I don't concede anything. I'm just giving you a little more insight.
Well, there's no point to concede, but in any event...
He is a liar.
It's irrelevant because he's going to be out of office next year. So you could say whatever you want about Obama, but Obama isn't the point.
He said this in 2013.
He's going to be out of office next year. Well,
I had a radio show back when George Bush was in. Why didn't you call me up? If you're going to hold Obama to this big lie, and I've identified that it's a lie, why didn't you call in and spend the time saying that George Bush was a liar and so was all of his underlings and Colin Powell, who lied and says weapons of mass destruction? Why is it that, you see, this is why a guy like me go away going, well, you may not call it racism, but I will for you. You concede the point about Bush.
Because you can't refute it. Well, so now you're going to deflect the conversation over to Bush.
Okay. Well,
there really isn't anything to refute.
Bush. Well, I understand.
I see him as a war criminal.
I understand, and you won't succeed in changing anything. And I won't.
The hypocrite part now.
Well, yeah, you're okay with that. I'm okay with that too. But
here's the hypocrite part.
Well, okay, I got that.
He has condemned Russia for what they've done in Crimea.
Okay.
At the same time, the United States occupies the Hawaiian Kingdom.
Okay. Well, then you should have been fighting some 80 years ago.
What
a long
does
time
one
ago.
Have to do with the other? Those are two irrelevant points. They're not related to each other.
He condemns Russia for annexing Crimea, when the United States continues to act as if they have sovereignty over our nation here, the Hawaiian Islands?
Again, those are two separate points, and the point that should be stated is you brought up Russia. Let me explain something. When you brought up Russia, let me just explain something to you. The United States is part of NATO. You have Baltic states that are encircling Russia, that are part of NATO.
And
you have U.S. troops in
Afghanistan
that are there. So it's not as if Russia is in a position of total dominance and strength. So part of the reason that they went into Crimea is because they feel threatened. Not that I'm a fan of Russia necessarily, I'm not, but you've got to look at it from a geopolitical point of view.
Well, you haven't refuted the point. He is a hypocrite because the United States occupies.
Well, what you're bringing up are points that aren't valid.
Well, let me chime in. Let's say if I concede the point, your point that you're stressing. So then I would say, okay, and I'll follow with these statements. So rather than stop at Obama lying to you and being, what do you call the term, two-faced? I don't know what the term you use, but then why don't you get on the horn and write the Japanese government and say, stop sending your population and your citizens here because you're funding a program that's owned by the United States government called tourism, and they're profiting from it, which is displacing the Hawaiians.
And whoa.
See, you got to listen. You got to listen.
The genocide has already done that.
All I'm asking you is this, is that why aren't you equally, if this is a lie, then why don't you call Canada? Call their radio show. Call their radio shows and tell them.
Their war crimes here.
Call the Europeans and tell them, don't come here. You're popping up.
They also have been informed by Dr. Tsai.
You understand?
Of treaties that they hold with the
whole
kingdom.
You have confirmed what he had said, and I share the same. The hatred for black people comes in all forms and shapes. And you're going to
say Obama hates Hawaiians.
Well, see, I think that's such
a... He hates Hawaiians. He knows very well.
But
there is absolutely no legitimacy at all to any U.S. claim of sovereignty over these islands. This is typical.
What it is a false equivalence.
Even their exhibit about
it's
that.
An invalid premise.
Okay, well, anyway, I appreciate you listening, and I don't think there's anything...
Aloha, Carol.
Aloha. But again,
that's an indication of a false equivalency and an invalid premise. In order for him to make his point, he has to take what he believes is a parallel instance, which is not parallel. It has nothing to do with one. Has nothing to do with the other.
Well,
so there's nothing to really refute or attack because there's no valid fact.
And it's an invalid premise. This is so perfect of an example to show why people are not succeeding and why people like Donald Trump can show up.
Right.
Because we're misinformed and we're emotional about things, and I'm a firm believer that the Hawaiian people should have their country back. I'm a firm believer in that what is just should be done.
Right.
But then to take on me about Obama lying about the...
Yeah,
the
one has nothing to do with the other.
And the point is...
False grievance.
And then refusing to incorporate the fact that they purposely and openly said, we're not going to vote for this. I get in, I'm going to kill the medical bill, right? But he's accused of lying, but they're saying, we're just going to kill it. You ain't got to worry about us lying. We're not going to afford you any medical care, right. Not the way Obama has presented.
Right.
You see, now, again, to sum it up, we as a people, African-Americans, we as a people, American citizens, we as a people, to include all ethnicities, our problem is we're being worked and tricked and cajoled and badgered and sold a bill of goods that which we have the rights. There's a constitution. And someone has whittled that constitution down with rhetoric such as this, as we see. A president serves 4 years per election. And they've automatically said, no, it's three.
Well, here's the point, you know, we're getting near the end of the hour. And your initial song that you played very early on in the first hour of the sideshow is a very good summation of what the Republican side and a little bit of the Democratic side has been, although the Democratic side has been actually quite civil. But here's the thing that you have to keep in mind about these candidates. Let me just look at the Republican side, because that's the one the most heat. The Republicans really don't have much of a choice. You have Ted Cruz, who is, if anything, worse than Donald Trump. He's not only a real right-winger, he's also a real right-wing extremist who's hated, who's despised by people within his own party. You've got Donald Trump. And the problem with Trump is that he is a horrible candidate. One, he can't give a speech. Other candidates can give a speech. He can't. He gives interjections. But the thing about him is he doesn't have positions. He has opinions. If you listen to anything that he says, nothing has any solid weight, any kind of mass, any kind of substance to it. Take, for example, what he said about the Palestinians. He stated that he would be an honest broker between Israel and the Palestinians. After stating he was very pro-Israel, when you look at what he had stated previously, that he wanted to ban all Muslims from the U.S., you just contradicted yourself. How can somebody who wants to ban all Muslims from the United States then turn around and say, well, you know, I'm going to be an honest and neutral broker between Israel and the Palestinian Arabs who are Muslim?
Yeah.
You can't do that. It's a contradiction, and, right. And his whole campaign is filled with contradictions. He's not serious. He has opinions and not positions.
Well, I want to thank all of you for listening to the Carol Cox Show. My guest, Albert Lanier, and we'll have him back, and just enjoy the conversation. But a little, and before I go, I always ask this question. Let's look back at Bill Clinton's record of appointing African-Americans in his cabinet, and you see what role that they played. Critical roles that most of them played was his secretary hit the dress with stains. Vernon Jordan went to make sure that Monica Lewinsky kept her job at Max Factor or whatever the makeup company was. And so that's all I know about Bill Clinton as far as progressing and giving back and enhancing the African-American population or people of color. So I'm concerned that the same mindset is that Arkansasian mindset that Hillary Clinton brings to the table. So vote smart, be smart. And if you want somebody that's going to hide the blue dress, then go for Hillary.
And don't forget what Hillary Clinton said years ago about super predators and bringing them to heel. And she wants the votes not only of African Americans but other people of color.
Right.
This woman who sees a lot of this youth, or did, as super predators.
And a lot of the prisons were filled because of Bill Clinton's legislation.
The crime bill, yeah.
So let's keep smart, folks. I'm not in love with either party, but I don't want to be treated like I'm their lover. So we'll talk to you later.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.